if the British Empire and its Commonwealth last for 1,000 years, men will still say this was their finest hour.
We stand for Queen, Country, and Video Games. BRB UK. Worse teeth, better accents.
Welcome to episode 270 of the Big Red Barrel UK podcast. I am Coleman. Hi! And we have no Dan. Dan is away.
Do I still interrupt you?
Yeah, you can if you want.
Do I do that?
Do you want to do that now?
Dan.
Get it out of your system?
I guess.
Cool. Dan's away. It's nothing urgent. It's his missus's girl. His missus's birthday.
Missus's girl?
Missus's is a hard word to say.
Missus's.
It's his partner's birthday today. So very happy birthday, Sarah. We'll see you next week, Dan. But until then, we have Tim.
Hello!
And returning, we've not had him on the show. It's been a while since we've had him on the show. It's Kev.
Hello. It was my birthday yesterday.
It was your birthday yesterday. Happy birthday, Kev.
Happy birthday.
It's cool. It's literally been a whole birthday since I was last on the show.
Okay. Wow.
You haven't been on in a while. We were thinking of someone to fill in for Dan today and, realised that you haven't been in a while and there's a little bit of barrel cast for a little bit, so we thought we'd get your voice out there again.
Yeah, it's because I got fed up with you guys.
Well, there's that. But it's nice to hear from you, Kev.
It is.
Nice to hear your voice.
I didn't mean to say that like, it is nice to hear from me, isn't it?
Yes, it is.
How great am
I? It is. I'm amazing. You should be pleased that I'm back on the show.
Witness me, peasants.
No, it's very nice to be back on a podcast again. It's been a while.
Excellent. Well, another thing that's been a while. It's been a while since EA put out a game without any microtransactions in them. So we were talking about Battlefront 2 last week. We were talking about all the controversy with the microtransactions and the most downvoted Reddit post in all history and all this kind of stuff. In all history, like there was Reddit in World War II. Hitler's Reddit post, they used to go down a bit.
Up until this recent week, actually, he had the most negative post in the history of Reddit.
But that's only because he asked for other people to downvote him and everyone had to obey, so...
That said, Hitler quotes on Taylor Swift pictures on Tumblr is a pretty decent account to follow. Anyway,
random.
I got nowhere to go from that.
Haters gonna hate. Since last week when we were talking about Battlefront 2, like literally about 20 minutes before the show went live, EA they didn't even announce. EA pulled all the microtransactions from the stores. And
Temporarily.
They put out a statement following about 90 minutes after.
Although that's still the case now, as far as I'm aware, no? They're still not back.
They're not back, no. So what they've done is they've removed everything from the store and then 90 minutes later they put out a statement going, hey, we've temporarily removed microtransactions from the store until such a time as where we fill the game and we can reintroduce these and everything's all ready. So it's kind of like a threat, really. It's like, well, we'll take out the thing you don't like, but we're definitely bringing them back, so watch out for that.
Right, but for me, this actually possibly provided the answer for the way forward, possibly. Because I don't know about you, like I would be of the opinion that most of the people that would pick this type of game up on day one are the type of people that are more likely to be happy to play through more of the game. And the type of people that would pick this up a month or so down the line are the type of people that would want to pay to catch up with those people.
Right.
And if you can put your game out for like a month or 2 or 3 months or whatever, and establish the fact that it definitely holds up by itself on its own with that kind of model of and structure of game, and then you introduce the ability for people to pay for microtransactions and catch up to those people, I somehow think that's a much fairer way of doing everything, no?
I like your optimism, Tim, but this whole debacle has erased any chance of that ever being the case.
No, and it's still a very scummy practice as well.
At this point, if that were to become the new norm, it would just be every review saying, well, we know that in a month, the shit's going to hit the fan.
That's it. We know every single game would be review in progress as well.
But for me, like, as I said, as long as the game can stand on its own 2 feet and the structure of the game is sound enough that you can play it without any microtransactions being introduced, I don't mind those microtransactions then being added afterwards for people that came late to the party that want to catch up to the progression of other people already in the game.
And the problem we have here is they've made a game that does focus around these microtransactions, and then by removing them and not making any changes to the actual game itself, you've now got a game that is left very, very, very grindy and feeling like it needs microtransactions to help you get back up again.
Is that the case? Because I only have it on secondhand information from other people, but I've seen a number of people on Twitter saying, well, I've played the game for like 20 odd hours. I haven't spent a penny on microtransactions, and I've unlocked every character in the game, including Darth Vader.
Okay.
So what the hell is the problem? And we did say that a lot of the people that are basing this criticism on, and look, I'm not saying the criticism is unfounded or unwarranted in some degree. I don't want to support them. But we did say, and I did say the caveat last week of, yeah, but those calculations are based on not including a lot of the things in game that do give you other rewards, like however many kills you've got in the game, and like in-game awards for progression within the game that weren't counted into that equation. And a lot of people are basing their opinion off this, seemingly off one person that sat down and worked out how long it would take to unlock Darth Vader and Luke, based on the progression that you saw, but without taking lots of other factors into account. So as much as I think the criticism is warranted, and as I said, this feels like a line in the sand moment, and it felt like a good time to stand up and push back on this. But at the same time, I do think the criticism has been a bit more heavy-handed than perhaps it was warranted by the content.
Okay. Well, let's talk about the actual thing being pulled, the microtransactions being pulled, because it's followed out further that a story in Wall Street Journal, because there's been a lot of stories following that point. Yeah. When you've got things like, I don't know how accurate the figure is, but 75,000 pre-orders were cancelled for the game.
If you wanted to do that on Origin, you had to phone up because they removed the link from their website.
Well, we spoke about that last week as well. There was the whole thing of the link went missing from the website, and they said that happens with all games at a point just before it gets released, and you have to wait till the game comes out, and then they can process your refund afterwards. I don't know how valid that is. I don't use Origin.
To be fair, that sounds like a shady business practice in general.
It does,
but not a good defense kind of thing.
PlayStation Store does that.
I can understand it. They've obviously got to process the money at some point, and they've got to process a lot of people's payments, so they have to make a cutoff point. But yeah, it doesn't look good for them, especially in the light of this type of stuff.
It doesn't. But then the other things as well, you've got to take into account, this is a 12A game. There's children playing this game, and a lot of the facts that are implemented into this microtransactional loot crate system that is in the game, they do take tactics from very well-known gambling tactics. It does seem very predatory, and it's not a good casting light on not just EA, but Disney, very family-friendly, kid-friendly Disney.
Yeah, and Disney got a bit annoyed and kind of pushed back on EA and said, you're making us look bad.
Yeah.
Sort this the hell
out. So, initially rumoured, but apparently this was covered in the Wall Street Journal as well. It seems like one of the heads at Disney, Bob Iger, he's the Disney chief executive, made a call to EA and went along the lines of, hey, we've got a film coming out. Can you not do this? what we're hearing about, because CNN were covering this, saying like big actual proper news media outlets, not just games media, covering that, hey, this encourages gambling for children and a Disney product.
Yeah, Disney aren't having the best month, are
really,
they? With the backlash from Marvel Heroes as well.
Yeah, but then, I don't know if you guys saw the other kind of thing that came out of this week where basically, and it's been slightly overreported, but Belgium are looking into the possibility of this being considered gambling.
Yeah, the Belgian Game Commission.
Yeah, and
the ESA have depicted that it is not.
Yes.
They have outright said that it's not.
This is following that report.
But that may have some weight within the games industry. I don't think it carries any legal weight beyond that, though, necessarily.
No, I think
that's them basically saying, we can't be bothered to self-regulate. And then a lot of other people stood up and go, okay, we'll regulate for you then. Yeah. Well done.
So that follows on. What is this gambling? By legal definition, no, it isn't gambling. You can't walk away with nothing in this situation. Tim, let me finish, please.
Yep. I just wanted to pick up. It's not it's not a legal definition, it's an industry definition.
Okay, industry definition. But anyway, so the point of this second investigation over in Belgium is not so much, is this gambling? It's more like, is this a bad influence on children? Is this something we need to regulate? Is this something we need to step in on?
Mm.
And yeah, I'm all for that.
Well, and I don't know if you saw also some... and I don't know exactly what their positions are, but some people from Hawaii, basically some politicians from Hawaii, stepped up and have kind of commented on this as well. And one of the comments that came out of that was one of them describing it as a Star Wars themed casino, I think it was, or something
wow.
along those lines.
Yeah.
And yeah, it was like, oh, that's, that doesn't sound good for you at all, basically. I think it was casino. It was like gambling den or something. It was something along those lines, but, but yeah, it just, it's not a good thing. And it's another example of if they don't self-regulate, and this is the same thing I said with iPhones a few years ago with in-app purchases and stuff. If they don't self-regulate and do a good enough job of self-regulating, someone that doesn't fully understand this will come in and force regulations upon the games industry that will mess things up much more than the self-regulation would have done. Like, yeah. I could fully see this impacting not only like loot boxes, but general in-app purchases within a game, maybe. And like we're saying, that's a bad thing within, you know, within the $60 or £50 price packet. But it's the accepted model in free-to-play gaming now, because otherwise people will pirate your game on phones, and that's just the reality of the situation. And if it disrupts that business model and messes people up, that's going to cause companies like EA and like a number of other companies a much bigger headache, and could have a massive dramatic impact on the games industry as a whole. Basically.
With regards to the phone thing, I don't think people have an issue these days, at least, with microtransactions in free-to-play games. I think the issue is when EA come out and say, yo, pay £80 for an edition of our game so you can play it 3 days early. And by the way, you can pay another £80 and get all the characters.
That's been my problem this whole time. I didn't like it in Overwatch, and everyone went, it's okay, it's just cosmetic. Like, no, I don't like this system. I don't like the idea of buying £60 for a game, more if you're getting a special edition version of the game, and then going, here's a bunch of microtransactions. I just don't like it.
Yeah, right. It doesn't sit well with most gamers, and I can fully understand that. And
I've got a list of tweets that would disagree with you when Overwatch came out, mate.
But again, like with Overwatch, I don't have as much of a problem with it if it is just giving you a cosmetic reward for what you're getting. Where I do have a problem with it when it steps over that boundary of pay to win. And I think most gamers have a problem with that. But I also accept that in general, the kind of in-app purchases and loot boxes and all these things have a very predatory, horrible nature. And I think that I am genuinely, apart from occasionally when drunk and playing Galaxy of Heroes, generally able enough to like ignore these and not have them be a problem for me type thing. But I don't think that's necessarily the case for every gamer. And
no,
I also
it's absolutely
think,
not. No. Yeah, you're very lucky if you're the kind of person that can completely hold off from addiction.
Exactly. And look, I've got a semi-addictive personality when it comes to playing games and all that type of stuff, but I've just found that I'm able to stay away from the in-app purchase things.
Tim, let me tell you about how much money I spent on Marvel Heroes.
Oh my God, yeah, you spent a shedload.
No way. Wasn't that all money you were provided with for reviewing it?
And then the rest, mate.
Oh my God, okay. But, oh wait, you mean the PlayStation stuff?
Yeah. Well, I spent probably as much as they gave me for free because I got a review code for the PC version. So I played a lot of that game.
Yeah.
So
I feel like you got your money's worth anyway.
You know, so I put about £50 into it maybe over the course of time.
Now, let me tell you how much money I spent in Rock Band over the years, because I actually did tally it up one day.
Yeah.
£368.
Wowzers! See, you're part of the problem. I mean, well, I'm part of the problem. I bought horse armor.
But you could see that as a microtransaction there, or yes. £1.20 per song, I think it was.
It effectively was, just before the term microtransactions came back.
The reason I didn't have a problem with it was because I knew what I was buying.
Yeah.
I wasn't buying
getting,
a blind
yeah.
bag and going, oh, yeah. I hope I get AC/DC. No, Miley Cyrus again.
And that's
the massive issue.
Yeah, and that's where these loot boxes do do stray a bit too heavily into the gambling side of things for my like. I also have an extreme problem, and I think most people would regard it as a problem. I don't mind if there's someone that is massively rich and has a load of money and wants to waste it on a game that makes me not have to spend more money on the same product in the future, i.e. if it helps keep the game at £50 and it means that that game doesn't go up because some idiot spending £1,000 that they can fully afford to spend, I don't have a problem on that side. But I don't see how you can divorce and separate that from preying on people that can't afford that and are just having a very addictive personality and can't help themselves. I also don't see how you can really have a decent argument. Like, how many cases have you seen where children have been like spending like 15 grand on FIFA Ultimate Team and stuff like that? And
or like before donuts in Springfield.
Yeah, donuts in Springfield. And, like, there's been so many cases of them. And if you think about the fact that you hear about all the headline amounts and all the ones that stand out for a crazy amount of money, think about all the ones that are just, you know, £100, £200, when that is a lot of money to some families. And it's preying on children that don't necessarily appreciate the value of what they're doing. And that is when I have an extreme problem with this business model, basically.
I think we've covered Battlefront.
It is gross. Done.
Yeah. So following suit of that, you may have heard about this as well. Well, you may not have heard about this, because Need for Speed Payback, or Need for Speed Hell in a Cell, as I like to call it, that also features microtransactions in a very gambly kind of lottery system.
But does it matter if no one's bought the game?
Exactly, because this game, for all intents and purposes, they had this game like all poised for the big, the video game circuit, doing all the different expos and stuff. They did E3, and then they pulled it from everything else.
Yeah, it didn't. It wasn't at EGX.
It wasn't EGX.
Didn't
it
see
wasn't
anything a, else.
Was it Gamescom? It wasn't anything like that. And then when the game came out, I didn't know. The game was out for a week and I didn't even know. Like I had to ask Tim.
Yeah, the amount of advertising that usually accompanies a Need for Speed game released just before Christmas, as it generally always is generally astounding. You cannot ignore the fact there was a new Need for Speed game out normally. And this was very much released with zero fanfare, with a complete whimper, with seemingly no marketing budget behind it whatsoever, and seemingly just, you know, let out to pasture and go
very
and
drab
die by yourself, basically.
Well, yeah.
So,
yeah, a big problem of that is not just, like, because last 2 years ago, the game, they went for this whole FMV, very forward, first-person camera views and real footage of people
that went well.
Yeah, it was a very cheesy storyline that not many people liked, apart from the inclusion of real life drivers and modders and stuff actually being in there, was pretty cool. But the game itself was very boring and you couldn't pause in it because everything was online, always online. This time they've got rid of that, gone back to, you know, full motion graphics and stuff, and it looks great. Apparently the storing is really boring. They've lifted parts from Fast and Furious, which, you know, they've done that before,
but it sounds like very much very formulaic and not a good way,
but they've brought back drag races and they're going to be fun, and they've added the pause menu, the pause button back again, but they've done this whole new system of upgrades being done through blind pack cards and you get things, and this is the funny thing. I only found out this the other day. The name of their loot boxes, they're called bait crates.
Yeah, that's just...
that's the most... we're going to bait you with this crate. but anyway, they've... So it came out...
I think the only way that could have been worse is if they called them jailbait crates.
Jailbait crate. So, they released the game. It didn't do too well. And following all the stuff with Star Wars, it seems to have knock-on effect in EA. And the next target was Need for Speed Payback.
Well, no, it also got very heavily criticized for the whole progression in the game being balked by the fact that it was really heavily encouraging you to spend on extra loot boxes.
Yeah, but really? Then along came Battlefront 2 and no one paid attention.
Yeah.
Kind of overshadowed it.
Yeah.
So they've announced that the update's taken place now, but they've put this whole update in there where pretty much you get extra rep and bank, so you get extra money and reputation points for different events and things actually in the game, rather than earning them through crates. And then these bait crates as well have like a I hate saying that word, a much larger drop for, you know, ending races and things. And you know, a lot of the parts you get through actually earning them in game rather than buying them, they have a higher quality to them as well. And now they've announced a second update is coming via a patch pretty soon. And that's going to have improved quality of the cards that you unlock in game, higher quality parts being stocked that you can actually buy with the in-game currency rather than, but they're making improvements to the game, and that seems like the right way to go. I'm going to wait and see how the second update goes, because they did put the game out on the Black Friday sales. And I was tempted, but I want to see how these changes take and how people react to them before I go out and buy Need for Speed.
I don't know about you guys. Like, I do like arcade racers, and Need for Speed is one that usually, like, I at least pay some attention to and is a possible. And there's nothing, there's no, not much competition in the arcade racing space at the moment. So this is something I would normally have been very interested in. I don't feel any loyalty to the Need for Speed brand because it doesn't, it doesn't equate to the same thing ever. It doesn't even equate to necessarily the same developers at any one point in time from one game to the next. And so I wonder if that is also the way a lot of other people see it, that you wait to hear if it's any good and if it's getting, you know, not mediocre, if it's getting mediocre reviews and there's problems with the progression and stuff. I could see this really falling on its face, basically. And, like, I don't know.
I think it already has. Yeah. That's the issue.
Yeah, that's why they're addressing it and stuff. But I don't know, like, I don't know how much you two care about Need for Speed, but it's one that I've bought, you know, I tend to at least pay attention and buy it when it's a good one, but I will only buy it when they're decent Need for Speeds, because that's not, it's not consistently the case with every release, basically.
I was literally just looking up the last, the date of the release of the last Need for Speed game that I thought was good.
Hot Pursuit?
And it was in 2010.
Which one's that? Hot Pursuit, yeah. Well, that was the last really good one.
7 years ago.
Oh. Well, with me,
Sugar, I went to the preview event for that.
Every time they announce a Need for Speed, I go, oh, Need for Speed, and get all excited about it, because I am a fan of the games. Mm. But I came into the series quite late. I started with Underground 2.
Oh, that is quite late.
Yeah, and because I never really liked driving games, and I kind of, because my friends played them, I kind of forced myself into playing them, and I really got into Need for Speed Underground 2. And then I didn't really get along with them for a while because they didn't have that same kind of system that I enjoyed. And then Burnout Paradise came out, and that was very, very Need for Speed-like rather than being Burnout-like.
See, I thought I came late to the party. I think I played a bit of Need for Speed 2, and the first one I definitely bought was Need for Speed 3, the original Hot Pursuit. Right.
So they're going to Burnout Paradise. And then Hot Pursuit. I played The Run. I actually did like The Run for what it was. But then each time a Need for Speed game comes out, I go, ooh, Need for Speed. And then I pick it up and go, no. That happens quite a lot. Even with the last game that came out, I tried that one for a while and just couldn't get behind it. So, yeah, I do prefer an arcade game racer, but I've kind of transitioned into the more simmy games only because there aren't enough arcade races out there. So I've ended up forcing myself to play sim games instead.
Yeah, and I think we can all just sit back and wait for The Crew 2.
Oh, God. Bleezy's well excited for that game, by the way.
It's got planes and boats and
planes,
all sorts.
Trains and automobiles.
I don't know if there's any trains.
There's trains.
Forza Horizon has been a nice series just to sort of stretch the ground, like middle ground between sim and arcade. It's not arcadey enough that I love it, but I do really like Forza Horizon games a lot.
Yeah, I really like that game as well. And for me, I'd rather an arcade racing game in the kind of vein of Split Second and was it Full Auto? What was the one with all the guns and stuff?
Yeah, that was Full Auto, yeah.
But yeah, there's one thing we actually forgot to speak about on the back of Paris Games Week, that Codemasters announced like an arcadey racing game looking thing that looked a bit more like kind of MotorStorm-esque, but with hopefully slightly more fun controls.
Okay.
But yeah.
Yeah.
So we can possibly look forward to that one. But okay. Hey.
Everything kind of links in together this week because CD Projekt, CD Projekt Red, they've basically had to make comments on the upcoming Cyberpunk 2077 because there were reports that it's going to be a games for service type title. So think like Destiny.
By reports, do you mean their CEO literally said it?
Yes, okay. So they've had to respond on this, and they did that via the CD Projekt Red Twitter accounts and gone, don't worry, we're not doing it in that kind of way you're thinking about. It's not evil. It's going to be fun. Think Witcher 3 with online. Brilliant. And and then they went on to comment, and I rarely swear on the show, so this will be fun. They went on to comment, there's no hidden catch, and you'll get what you pay for. No bullshit. Just honest game like Wild Hunt, we leave greed to others. And I thought that was a very funny comment on microtransactions.
Excellent last line there, yeah.
That is quite good.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I mean, did anyone doubt that CD Projekt Red would do right by, you know, their people? They've earned such a good name in video game circles with, you know,
not so much
not
in
anti-DRM and all
not
that
so much
stuff.
In staff service, but in the game especially.
Yeah.
People have reason to doubt them when their CEO came out saying, yeah, we're looking into games as a service.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's never a good thing to hear.
I would love to have been in the building the next day, or even that day, when the PR department run into his office, like, to
what
their boss.
What did you say?
And
he
just
said,
like, what have we told you about talking on the internet? Shut the f*** up!
Okay, Cyberpunk 2077, it's going to be the greatest game. It's the best game. Huge game. Open world. Tiny transactions. Love it.
They went out of their way with The Witcher 3 to it was part of their advertising campaign. Like, this is a single player game. There's no multiplayer whatsoever. There's no microtransactions. This is just a single player game for people who like single player RPGs.
Yeah. And as well, they did all the like so much free DLC, which could have been easily microtransactions. Everything was cosmetic and, you know, little flares to spells and costumes for other people and stuff. And,
yeah,
you know, and they did all that for free. And then the only thing they charged for was the expansions, which were pretty reasonable as well. They were like,
well, given the expansions were about 40 or 50 hours of gameplay each themselves.
Exactly, yeah. I mean, the first one was about, I think the first one was £10 and the second was £15.
Well, I was just going to say, while mentioning it, they're actually on sale in the Black Friday sale.
Yeah. I picked up the season pass for something like £10 recently. So,
oh, speaking of which, the Steam autumn sales on at the moment, and I think The Witcher 3 is like £10 for the Game of the Year edition.
Blimey, that's such good value for money in terms of playtime.
Yeah. Especially if you've got the PC to run that and make it look really, really nice.
With all the hair physics and stuff. Also, just to mention, that game that I was mentioning by Codemasters is Onrush. And seems to have some of the, I think, some or all of, or a lot of the dev team from Drive Club as well. So
that's that's lyrics to a Will Smith song, I'm sure.
What, Onrush?
Yeah, look out. Or else you get Onrush into the Wild Wild West. And I bounce into the Wild Wild West.
It does
West.
Seem to be one word that's shouted as well. It's Onrush.
Is it camel case? That's all I
need
to know.
No, it's all uppercase. Oh.
All right, and I'd say everything all ties together. So we've spoken about the microtransaction-laden games, the game that is not going to have microtransactions, and likely the future of video games once the government gets a hold and bans microtransactions and puts all the AAAs out of business. So you may have remembered Ninja Theory brought out a really cool game called Hellblade, and that's doing pretty well for itself. It's been reported it sold 500,000 copies.
Excellent.
Yay. Yeah.
Which meant it turned a profit before schedule, 3 months after its launch.
Good news.
Yeah. So they were
meant
to, I think they were predicting 6 months after launch instead, but they halved that, and that's really cool.
I'm so pleased that game's done well.
Now, that game, if you don't know, that game had a 3-year development cycle, team of 20 working on it, and solely digital platform release, no physical content, and not a full retail price game. It was like, what, £30? It was less than that, wasn't it? It was 25?
25, I think.
£25, $30. Such an achievement. And it looks amazing. I did not believe the size of the team when I saw it.
Yeah, it looks incredible. The sound production is just flat out second to none this year especially.
Do you think they could have done such a good job and done this type of thing had they not been standing on the shoulders of their previous successes, though?
Well, they wouldn't have had the resources to put into this and risk it if they hadn't.
That's what I think. I just wonder, you know, is this a a model that other upcoming companies could follow, or is it something that only a company in the position in which they're in? All power to them. There also just happened, I can never remember how to pronounce his name, but the head guy, Anton DeBeck. Something. But anyway, he was a really nice guy. I interviewed him a few years ago. He's really nice. And a few other people at the company I've met have been really nice. And also, like, really dedicated to the craft of making video games as well. So
they make some really goddamn good ones as well. And I won't lie to you guys. Like, I bought Ninja Theory.
CEO.
Flinging my... Look, I sold my speedboat. I had to buy something.
Used your speedboat money to buy Ninja Theory.
Yeah, I bought Hellblade. I think there's a lot to like in that game. I personally don't like playing the game all that much, but I am really pleased that I gave them the money.
As we've established before, you don't like artsy fartsy titles.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. I was hoping a little bit more for some action game in there, but it wasn't.
Yeah, I was expecting more hack and slash than journey adventure.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's not a bad thing. Clearly the audience is out there for that. And I think ultimately for what that game's trying to achieve, that's what it needed to be. And I'm glad I gave them the money, because I want more, even if I don't like what they make, I want more developers to take massive risks like this.
And they've always been one for kind of pushing the envelope a little bit in terms of what they're looking to produce and how they're looking to do things. It's nice to see them having success with something that feels like it was an experiment that will benefit not just them as a company, but could benefit other companies in similar positions to them as well.
The single player experience isn't dead. It's doing very well. The mid tier, the mid card. I want to say double A, but that doesn't make sense.
People do use that phrase, but I find that jarring.
Yeah, I don't really want to call it a B game, because that would make it seem like it's lesser, and it's not.
I mean, mid-tier game, I think is a fair phrase,
yeah,
I think.
Like THQ sort of thing.
Yeah.
So the mid-tier game is back. That's Woo-hoo! Good. That's not died off yet. And apparently you don't need to fill your game with a bunch of predatory microtransactions.
That, isn't it?
Games are getting more expensive, though, so it's fine.
The one thing we haven't mentioned with that is it's the very inherent nature, not of the games industry, but of a capitalist economy, that you have to keep on finding new revenue streams and new ways to increase your revenue year on year when you are beholden to shareholders and worried about your share price and stuff like that, basically. I'm not saying it excuses it. I'm just saying... It's a societal problem beyond video games, not necessarily just a problem with video games. It's just something that we tend to hear about a lot more in video games, because they're examples where people get vocal and push back on, basically.
Yeah. Right, I'm going to change tack slightly and talk about something off agenda, because I just got a message.
Ooh.
I think this would be a
good one. Oh, exciting breaking news.
Nelly's messaged me and asked, how's Uncharted 4 A Thief's End and The Lost Legacy, and would we recommend buying them? Because they're on sale.
Well, nah. Also add to that the actual Uncharted trilogy is on sale for like £15, and I found it really difficult to resist, considering Uncharted 2 is probably one of my favourite games of all time, and I don't own it yet on the PS4. I found it really hard to resist buying that for effectively a fiver, basically. Mm. I don't know about you, I meant to actually finish... The Lost Chapter.
Lost Legacy.
The Lost Legacy, sorry, when on Extra Life, and I got too stuck into golf and Mario, and so didn't make the time for it. But I really enjoyed that so far. I think it was really high quality, and this seemed like more Uncharted, which sounds like a backhanded compliment, but I really, really enjoyed that game. I thought Uncharted 4 was right up with the highest quality, and so I would generally recommend picking up both of those, yeah.
Yep, same here. I love Uncharted. Never really get into the multiplayer side of those. I love the single player.
Yeah.
It's very good. I also haven't finished The Lost Legacy, but it's an amazing looking game, and I really like the characters. The problem is that game came out and I started playing it, and I got something like 5 hours in, and then Destiny 2 came out, and I haven't gone back to it since.
It was badly timed, possibly, but I do want to go back to it and finish it at some stage.
Yeah, I'll probably start again, because I really did enjoy that opening. But yeah, Uncharted 4. Kev doesn't. Kev says no. Me and Tim say yes.
Is that right?
No, I say.
But Kev, the magic rope.
Do what your heart wants. Do what your heart wants.
Magic rope, Kev. Remember the fun times of the magic rope.
Magic rope.
The magic bloody rope.
You were on this here show saying how much you liked Uncharted 4.
I literally went back and listened to that show a while back.
Magic rope.
Because I wanted to remember that conversation, and I still think every point I made was absolutely justified. It's just hilarious listening to Diarmid like sitting on the other end of the mic groaning.
But yeah, no, well, yeah, they're definitely good games, and if you haven't jumped in on them yet, then for the prices that they're on sale at the moment, I definitely think they're worth it. The one caveat I'll add to that is if you've played any of the recent Tomb Raider games, if you liked them, this is definitely in that wheelhouse. If you didn't like them, then you maybe won't like these because they are very similar.
Good.
Tomb Raider's better, though.
I prefer Uncharted, gotta say.
I still hold Uncharted 2 in higher regard than either of the Tomb Raiders.
Don't get me wrong, I don't think Tomb Raider's on that level either.
Okay, that is all the gaming news for this week, and a weird recommendation because I randomly got a message partway through recording.
Yeah.
So let's talk about the games we done played, and as Kev is here this week and we haven't spoken to him in a while, and it is his birthday, we should let him talk first. Whoops, I'm still counting it. We should let him talk about Wolfenstein 2!
Wolfenstein!
Senor Colossus!
Wolfenstein 2!
Schweinhund!
Schweinhund! Panzerhund!
It's, right, Wolfenstein 2.
Wolfenstein 2!
Wolfenstein 2.
Brilliant.
Wolfenstein 2. That's
just racist when you do it.
I know, right?
You're not authentic like me.
Do you know, now that I've played through Wolfenstein 2, I have seen racism.
Oh.
And, yeah.
It's not good.
Wolfenstein 2 is, shall we say, really difficult to talk about without spoiling some of the most absurd and, let's say, deserving of conversation moments that have ever been in video games.
Yeah, it sounds like some good water cooler moments, as they're described, basically.
I don't like the Uncharted games, as we were just discussing, because they're all story and no substance to me. And that's not enough for me. When I play a video game, I like to be able to play something that I enjoy playing.
You like the sizzle and the steak.
Exactly. I don't actually care all that much about story. I want a game that's fun to play.
I like a marriage of both, but hey, anyway.
No, hey, ideally every game would be a marriage of both, but let's face it, they're not. Mm-hmm. Wolfenstein 2 comes dangerously close, as the first game did, to being an amazing story with just lackluster gameplay.
Yeah, I've heard that a lot. Basically, it seems to be the general consensus.
Yeah, it keeps it. I mean, the shooting's fun enough that it kept me interested to some extent, to the extent that I weren't through the whole game. But yeah, outside of the gameplay stuff, it's just really difficult to talk about this game. Like, you know how in the first game, I mean, the moratorium's got to be up on a 2014 game.
Yes,
now,
yes,
right?
I think so.
So that first game, if you didn't know it was coming, when they're suddenly like, "Yo, we got to go to the moon,"
yes.
Like. Hold on a minute, what? And like,
hello?
There's so many moments like that in this game.
I remember, because before first Wolfenstein came out, and I was playing we got like a 40-minute demo thing at an event, and I was really enjoying it, especially because I was interacting with all the things on the walls, and at some point, you interact with a picture of the moon, it's like, so, they build a base on the moon. F*** you, moon. I really like moments like that. So if that's in Wolfenstein 2, that kind of stuff, I'm all game for it.
Oh, it is. Oh God damn it! It's all over the place. I really don't even know where to start.
It's apparently got some like real high points of not necessarily storytelling, but story and
just moments
within
in a story.
Moments, yeah.
Oh yeah, there's a ton of them. It's the one thing that keeps you going like level to level. Because even if you're in a level that you are getting frustrated with, and this game is absolutely rock hard, don't get me wrong.
I've heard it's good. A lot of people are saying they've been whacking it down to easy difficulty as well.
Yeah, put it on absolute easiest difficulty if you just want to burn through it. That's what I ended up doing. As I say, the gameplay's not fun enough. Or at least not consistent enough to have the challenge and enjoy it. And you know I like a challenging game, but this game just frustrated the crap out of me.
More so than the first game, yeah? Like, it sounds like it's different enough in gameplay.
I think the first game had better level design than this one does.
Yeah, I've heard the levels are weirdly, like, you'll easily get lost and then cornered and then killed and then get fed up with the level a bit, kind of thing.
I'll give you an example, right, which this doesn't actually, this is like the least spoilery thing I can say about this game without ruining someone's day. But at some point in the game, you get, there's like a fork in the road and you go one of three ways. Which means you have an ability to, you get to pick one of three technologies that you're going to take through the rest of the game. One of them lets you get up really high. The other one lets you barge through stuff. The other one lets you sneak through tunnels.
Okay.
All right. So those are your three options. But now whenever you're in a level and you see one of those options ahead of you, like, oh, there's a really high thing up there that I need to get to. And then you look to the left of that and there's a breakable wall. And then to the left of that is a little tunnel that you can go
so
through.
It doesn't really make a difference.
Like, yeah, it's like, what the hell? You've just put three different ways through a wall within 2 feet of each other. And like, that's what I mean by, like, the level design just isn't very interesting. Like, even when you think, oh, I'm going to take this tunnel thing and now I'm going to stealth my way around the levels and feel cool. It's like, no. You're stealthing your way through an area that you otherwise would have either shoulder barged through or jumped over.
It's literally just choose the flavor of door you want to walk to, like A, B, or C kind of thing.
It makes no difference whatsoever, really. Right. And that's kind of the story of Wolfenstein 2's level design is there are levels there. I'm not saying that they put a whole lot of effort into what sort of direction the player's going to go in them. Yeah, so that's unfortunate.
Yeah, it's a bit of a shame.
At the same time, as I say, the story is, and I will rarely say this, but the story was so good that it kept me going through despite the irritations with the gameplay.
To the point where you would actually recommend people picking up, especially, again, Black Friday, it's on sale for like
£25.
Which is ridiculous at the moment on PS4.
Listen, this is one no one should be missing out on. And I will say, if you're hesitant about it, like, by all means, just go and watch it on YouTube if you want to watch someone else go through it. Mm. But, man, You
want to see the story, basically.
You cannot miss this one. And trust me, get it. Whether you're going to buy it and play it through yourself or watch someone else play it on a free video service of your choice, do it soon. Because this is the kind of stuff that once it gets spoiled, you're going to be like, because at some point, you guys are probably sitting there now going like, oh, it sounds like there's some pretty interesting stuff in here. Oh, I might get around to it. But like, you can't wait on it. Because the second you hear one of these spoilers, you're going to be like, oh my God, I wish I'd seen that myself without any knowing that it was coming.
Yeah.
That's not just for one thing in the game, although it is for one thing specifically in the game, but that's for so much of it. You want to go into this thing blind and it will absolutely stun your pants off.
I have a question.
Go for it.
I think every time I talk to you about a game, it's usually a sequel, and I always ask the same thing. Hey, Kev, should you really buy the first game first and then do this, or could you jump straight in?
That's a difficult one.
Is there like a decent recap of what happened first, or...?
Not really, no.
It does seem to kind of, like, from what I've seen, it does a kind of reset-ish of the story at the beginning of this one, though?
Well, it gives you the opportunity that in the first game, there was a like one player choice that you would make.
Near
where
the end of
you
the
have
game,
to pick
sort of
who lives and who dies. No, at the start of the game.
Oh, right, at the start of the game.
You would have who lives, who dies. Yeah. It was Fergus or Wyatt.
Yeah,
and
so
whichever
that,
one
yeah.
of them you pick decides for the rest of the game which NPCs you're going to come into contact
yeah.
with
yeah.
and the various other abilities and things. And at the start of this game, you get to pick again which of those two you
right.
saved in the first
which
game.
Okay.
So, yeah, it resets it, but in a way that's not, like, drastic.
Yeah. And also, because what... Was it the New Order, the one that they did, was the, like, big DLC-type standalone
the
thing?
The Expandalone, it was...
Yeah. That was
Old Blood.
Old Blood. Did that have any story beats that are necessary to be knowledgeable of? Because I didn't play that one at all.
No, that was a prequel, and it was more of a, like, comic book that you play than a story game. Yeah, you don't need to play the Old Blood. That question you asked, Colin, is an interesting one, because I think Wolfenstein... New Order is...
So my question wasn't interesting then, Kevin.
No, it wasn't.
Eh?
It didn't make sense.
No, it's far less interesting. Yeah, New Order has a hell of a lot of story in it, arguably more than New Colossus does. And lore-wise, there's a lot that you see in the New Order. Like, the big bad in the New Colossus, Frau Engel, is introduced to you in the first game. But very briefly.
Oh, yeah, on the train.
There's the train scene, and then later on there's what's it called? A concentration camp that she's running.
Right. Which is in the trailer of the first game, I remember as well. That was really quite a giveaway.
And virtually all of the characters that you're around, at least in the start of the second game, are the ones that you spent the entire first game with. So there's a lot of sort of catching up with people, not in terms of BJ catching up with them, but in terms of you as the player going like, oh man, I forgot all about you.
Did you just laugh at BJ, Cole?
I laugh at BJ every time. I can't help it. Sorry.
It's funny. There's no getting around it. This guy's name is BJ.
I still get on the tube and laugh when they say Final Destination is Cockfosters. Yeah. All right. So recommended.
Absolutely. I would advise, if you've got the opportunity, play the first game first.
Okay. Where's this placing on the Game of the Year so far scale for Kev?
Oh, man. My Game of the Year top 10.
It's going to be complicated.
I think it's set in stone at this point. At least in terms of the 10. I haven't decided on the specific order yet, but Wolfenstein's probably in the 5 to 10 range.
Okay.
It's not a good enough, like, fun enough gameplay experience for me to justify a top 5 spot, given some of the other games that I've really enjoyed playing this year.
All right. Before we move on to Tim.
Oh.
Got an update from Nelly.
Yep.
She found those two games on sale in a bundle for $15. Yeah, pick them up. That's a good price.
Yeah. Do it.
Do you know, even I'd grab that, to be
exactly.
honest.
Exactly. Even Kev, who hates Naughty Dog.
Who hates fun and good stuff.
But you know what? I own all the Naughty Dog games, with the exception of that most recent one.
You're like a...
did you even buy Crash Bandicoot?
Did I? No, I didn't do that.
Yeah, come on.
I did.
I thought, mate, I knew Crash Bandicoot was crap when it came out.
Yeah.
The first one.
Do you know what? That came out and everyone was banging on about it. And in the end, I caved. And I went, I'm going to buy that. And looked online and went, I'm not paying 35 quid for three old games that I've already beaten. And then I found it for a tenner later, picked it up and started playing it. And my God, the hitboxes on Crash, they used to be squared. Now they're like rounded and you can't land any jumps on anything. It's impossible.
It's even worse than the original, arguably.
Yeah. Nelly, close your ears for the moment. Otherwise you'll get a spoiler from Uncharted 4 and anyone else that bothers. But I literally got all the nostalgia I needed from the Crash Bandicoot level in Uncharted 4 because that was all the Crash I ever played.
That spoiled before the game even came out.
Well, just in case. That was a good little nod. She might be about to play it. Didn't want to spoil it for her. You can come back now, Nelly. You're okay.
And you're back in the room.
I genuinely didn't know about that when I played Uncharted.
Yeah, and it was a nice surprise.
That would have been a great surprise if I hadn't seen it splashed all over Facebook the day before the game came out. So, hey. All right, Tim.
Yes.
You've got two games. I've got two games. Ooh. I reckon you do one, I do one. You do one, I do one.
Oh,
just in case we run over.
To me, to you, to me.
So take a pick out.
We're
going to
chuckle brothers this, are we?
Go for it.
Nice. Right. Well, the big one to jump in on first, which I'll probably spend a bit less time than I would on the slightly smaller game, but the big one, Skyrim VR.
Skyrim VR.
Big VR game for this time. And
Dragons.
That's a big game.
Magic.
Yeah, just to catch.
Swords.
Just
vomiting.
Yes, all the things. But just.
Fusrodar.
Just to catch everyone up on
arrow
kind of
to the knee.
Where I am with Skyrim, I basically jumped into it, started playing it, got distracted by side quests, didn't do that much of the main story, and then fell off it and never came back to it. Partly because it felt a little bit samey to me from having played so much Oblivion, basically. But
that's fair.
I did like it. I didn't dislike the game. I just fell off and never got back on it. So this was, for me, a really good excuse to jump back in. And a few weeks ago, post-EGX, I spoke about the demo and some of my misgivings. But I'm glad I gave that with the caveat of hopefully there are things they will sort out for the final demo, because for the final build, because I had problems with some of the objects looking like non-3D and looking a bit weird and janky, and I was forced to play on the Move controllers. Now, apparently, when you get used to the Move controllers, and this is like secondhand information from other people, but when you do get used to them and you've played them a little bit more and you get time to get used to the nuances and where the slight odd layout of buttons and the teleporting and all that type of stuff, but apparently when you do get used to it and spend a bit of time with it, it is quite good fun, and I may jump in and play for like a few hours with it, because swinging the sword is quite good fun, kind of thing, and then being able to independently aim your two arms if you're doing like magic from two different arms, It's quite cool, and I can see how the bow might work reasonably well as well. But that aside, I generally played, just sat down with a DualShock 4, and I think that's probably the way that it would be more sensible to play most of the game. As I often do with most VR games, I immediately went in and turned off all the comfort settings and to see, you know, where I was. I actually feel that it does this thing where when you're moving or when you're just looking around, where, and a lot of games do this in VR, where it kind of puts this black circle that kind of stretches in and out as you're rotating your view or as you're moving. And I actually find that has more of a bad effect on like just making me feel uneasy in the game. I actually find I prefer it when those are removed. And
I've heard a couple of developers refer to that as lazy programming. it's a way of getting around motion sickness by having the thing to focus on. But it's more common in ports. And if you find it in a straight up VR game, then you know that's a lazy developer.
I don't mind, like with most VR games, and Rigs was one of the first ones I saw it in because that was a launch game type thing. But I don't mind as long as they give you the option to turn it off. And I went straight in, I turned that off, I turned a few of the other comfort settings off, and I have been absolutely fine just hooning around and, like, you know, at my leisure and jumping off things and doing things. The only thing I find really disconcerting, and I did try it a couple of times to see what it feel, but if you rapidly spin round in the circle on the spot, that can be that can be a bit bad. But
funny that, eh?
Yeah, like, but you know,
I do that in real life and it happens,
yeah,
as
doing
well.
Doing that in real life
enough.
Is not good. But doing that in real life when you're not actually spinning round is somehow even more disconcerting. Like, it messes around with your inner ear and stuff. But look, generally when just walking around doing stuff, it has exceeded my expectations, especially possibly because they were lowered slightly by playing the slightly shoddy demo. But set that all aside, like, I am all into this. It has been fantastic. And look, it's a big game that I didn't necessarily appreciate, but I think I've already got further in the main story than I did in the previous game after like just 12 hours or so of playing it, basically. You know, I've gone up and seen the Greybeards, and then I've advanced the kind of Dragonborn main story more than I had previously, basically. But yeah, like, it's, you know, it's one of those things where if you don't like Skyrim, there's no way you're going to like this. It's still the same game, essentially. But they have done some really nice things to adapt the... And look, it's stuff that they kind of needed to do, but I've seen other ports and other just general VR games where this hasn't been taken into consideration. But they've done a really nice job of redesigning the UI so it works really well in VR. A couple of examples of that. The compass is always on screen, but you don't normally see it. To see it, you just look down and you can see your compass. And that's really quite handy.
I quite like that.
Yeah, and then just the way that they've kind of curved the menu screens when you're going to the upgrade menu, and just kind of, different menus within the game, the way that they've curved and adapted some of that information kind of around you is just really nice, really well thought out, and really well done. And for me, this... I was a bit wary of Skyrim, not even, you know, before I played the demo, I was a bit wary of them just shoving this out the door almost kind of thing. You know, I mean, just going, hey, it's an old game, go. And apparently it does look better on the Pro, and I'm just playing on a standard console, and this and the other game I'm going to talk about at the moment do apparently look quite a lot better on the Pro, and they're ones that really do take advantage of the extra sort of texture definition and all that type of stuff. But... yeah, I mean, I've been absolutely fine playing it on the regular console and really enjoying it. It does kind of show its age a little bit. You know, it's kind of graphically not fantastically impressive. But it still kind of feels impressive in the fact that you are in that world and fully immersed within that world with everything around you. And it's such an immersive world in itself that it really lends itself quite well to that as well. And just the fact that you can, you know, play the game the way that you want. I don't know about you, I often pick and in Oblivion I definitely picked a kind of custom character and made things all myself, and this one I picked a Red Guard, which I don't think I've ever been before, and it just happens to be really well suited for the way that I like to play the game as well. It's got good destruction magic, and I'm generally hooning around with flames in one hand, burning people to a crisp, and then if they come up close to my face, I mace them in the face, and then yeah, and that generally seems to be getting me through a lot of combat quite easily at the moment as well. But yeah, it's, as I said, it comes with the caveat of if you don't enjoy Skyrim, you probably won't enjoy this. But if for any reason you missed out on Skyrim and it was your sort of game, then this is definitely worth coming back to. And if you're a lover of Skyrim, you haven't been in that world until you've played it in VR, as far as I'm concerned. You've been a casual observer, almost watching someone else from afar type of thing. And this feels like I am in that world. Not only that, it has made me raise the question of what other games would I like to see from the previous generation this done and done as well as this? For me, the first answer to that is BioShock, basically. I would love to see BioShock VR, because I think that would work really well. And there's a whole host of other first-person games that I'm hoping developers are now looking at this and going, well, look, this is a really good thing we can do with our existing properties from the previous generation. Might take a slight graphical upgrade here and there to make it look nice, but a lot of those games have already been done for this generation of place of PS4 and Xbox One, and I'd really like to see some of those games ported over to VR that are suitable. First person games being the kind of main kind of first place to go, but there's so many games that could fit into that category that I'd love to see come over. So I really hope that this is the start of that being something. And that wasn't something I at all thought would be the case before I played a lot of this, basically. So, yeah.
I have a single question. It has nothing to do with VR.
Right.
Does it come with the two major expansion packs?
Yes, it does. And that's all included as well. The Dragonborn expansion. So I've already had spoiled for me the fact that I will be flying on a dragon at some point, and I am so looking forward to that.
So I just want to jump straight to that. Yeah.
I was just about to say there's one scene in particular you should be looking forward to.
Mm.
So I've played this myself as well. I didn't play as much as Tim did. I got as far as the whole opening scene where you fight you don't fight the dragon, you run away from the dragon. And then the point you get to the open map. And that was the point I had to stop because it was giving me a headache to play. I was feeling a little bit nauseous playing it. But that's just me and VR. Yay!
Yay!
Take my big takeaway from it. I did at the start where you're all in you're on the back of a cart, horse cart, and you're being taken to be executed. And everyone's kind of sitting sideways and they're face down and they've got their hands together. And I had the VR headset on and I'm sat sideways on the thing, just looking direct on. And I was looking around at them as I was talking to them. I was like, this is actually really cool. Yeah. I like this.
Well, that actually reminded me, there was a VR game that they put chapter one out called Fated the Silent Oath, which I talked about a while ago. Yeah, and they did a similar thing in the start of that story as well. But yeah, that works really well when you're kind of passively in a cutscene type thing. But as I said, it makes you feel like you are in that place, in that world, much more so than just playing the game on a flat screen TV. It just reminded me when you were talking about the dragons. First dragon I fought, yeah? Basically, I just done the whole Greybeard thing, went back to town. I was like, right, I've got a big journey to do now. I'm going to go buy me my first horse. I'm going to slap down 1,000 gold on my first horse. Get my first horse. And then I was galloping up this mountain and I was like, I hope I can get my horse over this mountain, otherwise I'm gonna have to go all the way around. That's gonna be a much longer journey. Let's go up this mountain. And then dragon swoops down and I was like, oh my god, dragon, get off my horse, fight. In the middle of the fight I'm like, where'd he get that cow from? Why is he dropping that cow from the sky? I don't remember there being cows in this game. That's a bit odd. So fight, dragon, kill, right. Now I need to get back on my horse. Oh, horse. Oh. That cow was a horse. Oh, my horse is dead. Oh, I just spent 1,000 gold to get some horse meat. Oh.
Dragons are mean, man.
Yeah, mean
I
dragon.
I love the dragon encounters. So what I was going to get as well, as you say, it's not the best looking game. It is very dated now.
Mm.
And the problem, the main takeaway I had from that, yeah, it's pretty cool playing it in VR, But after playing the enhanced edition, then going back, because
that might be more difficult.
It is essentially PS3, Xbox 360 graphics that they're using there.
But again, I would say that apparently it is one game that really takes advantage of the Pro and does look a lot better in the Pro. And I've seen side-by-side videos and it does look a lot better in the Pro.
No mods as well. I do miss the mods.
Yeah, see, I've never played with them, so yeah. I was just pleased to get the DLC.
I'm just saying, if you're going straight, I mean, if VR's a good gimmick and you just like, you know, you like the VR aspect, then you're probably going to get enough out of this.
You're going to get 400 hours out of it, so
if
yeah.
If you've never played the updated versions of Skyrim, then this is going to be good. If you have played the updated versions and you go back to this, it's going to be a bit more harder, I think.
More jarring, I would have thought.
Yeah. And I don't like the idea. Like, the dragon came down and he roared. He didn't have big sunglasses on, didn't go, "Step into a Slim Jim." Oh, yeah. You know, he didn't do any of that. So I wasn't
happy.
It's
just boring and dragon like, eh?
All my weapons weren't from Lord of the Rings. You know, just had none of that.
Once again, proving that Skyrim without mods is bad Skyrim.
Yeah. Skyrim on Xbox One or on PC is the way to go, because PS4 locks out any kind of outside materials for mods.
I will say, as fun as that sounds, I'll take the VR version over that any day, I'm afraid.
I've been tempted since I got here to set it up on your Xbox. I might do that.
I will never play a version of Skyrim ever again that doesn't have mud crabs that wear a top hat and a monocle.
Oh, I love mud crabs and a top hat.
Well, you have to play Skyrim VR one day, Kevin. Just see what you think anyway. But
I actually have done on my Oculus.
Oh, okay.
Ooh.
Ew.
A couple of years back. It wasn't a proper port. It was just together thing.
Yeah, I remember that being a thing. Because they used to do Minecraft as well, and they were looking into making making this VR Minecraft mod, and then after a while went, we can't do this. There's no way of doing it without it being just this horrible mishmash mess. And then Microsoft bought it, and they went, yeah, we're going to make a totally new Minecraft that works in VR. So... You got that to look forward to. I saw Explorer. Was it Explorer that came
Discovery.
Discovery, that's it. That came out this week. Apparently that's going to be really good.
Yeah, and apparently that is just like Minecraft in VR, basically. Yeah,
very slow, though.
Yes, a bit on the slow.
Good for building. Mm-hmm. All right, I'm going to talk about I Am Mayo.
I Am Mayo! What the hell is this?
This is a game that...
It's a sim that you play a classic Radio 1 breakfast host.
Yeah, Simon Mayo on the adventure to be quiet while another man talks about movie reviews. No, this is I Am Mayo. It's a game that came out on the Vita and then became a Vita PS4 cross-buy title.
Right.
I've heard of this through PS I Love You XOXO, and they were all talking about it a while ago. If you're a Vita owner, you have to buy I Am Mayo. And like, there was some joke. I knew there was a joke to this, but I didn't know what it was. And it came out in the US, and they kept talking about it, but it was never out in the UK, so I couldn't pick it up. And then randomly, so I bought some stuff on Black Friday, and then I went to go install Assassin's Creed Wolfenstein 2, and I noticed at some point I've bought I Am Mayo, which was probably 99p, I think.
Drunk purchase, maybe?
Maybe a drunk purchase. It's hard to tell. I work nights and I work very long shifts, so I might have bought it like 4 in the morning looking for sales at one point. So I fired this up last night, and it's the most pointless game I've ever played. You have a jar of mayonnaise on the screen.
Right.
You can move a hand called the disembodied hand.
Yeah.
You move around the screen with the left stick, and then you hover over the mayo, and then you tap it with the X button. And you just keep tapping it. And then
Is it like a cookie cup clicker?
Not really, because I think there's a point to those kind of tap time waste management games. Yeah. This is literally tapping a jar of mayonnaise. And you do it so much, and then you'll get a reward, and you'll click that reward in the menu and activate it. And sometimes it will be like, hey, this mayonnaise has now got a different label on it, or now it's wearing a pair of pants. Or now we've replaced the mayo labels with catsup labels. And then you tap it for a certain amount of time with this add-on to it, and then another reward will unlock, and then you keep on doing that until you've done this 10,000 taps.
That definitely sounds bizarre. However, I have a question, though, Coleman.
Okay.
It says, I am Mayo, and it doesn't sound like you are Mayo.
No, I think it's speaking on the person of the Mayo, because there is a whole thing of, There are story rewards where you click a thing and it will tell you a story, and it's all about the mayonnaise being a jar of mayonnaise.
Right.
And the whole point of this game is you're meant to tap 10,000 times and then the lid of the mayonnaise will come out, come off the jar. And it's completely pointless. It's a time waster. However, I think I paid 99p for it and I got a platinum trophy. So, and I got a platinum trophy in about 40 minutes. So
okay.
That's the quickest platinum trophy I've ever earned.
How can that have a platinum trophy in some of the games that don't? I don't understand how that system works.
I don't understand. Like the re-releases of the Telltale games, like The Walking Dead Season 1 and 2, they took the platinum trophies away.
What?
But this got a platinum trophy
somehow.
Yeah,
and it's 40 minutes long. That's bizarre.
Yeah. So there you go. If you're after a quick platinum trophy.
I don't think I've ever earned a platinum trophy.
This now took me up to 9.
Okay.
But yeah, I played this randomly last night. I went, I'm going to see what this is about. And it just turned out the reason they were championing it on PS I Love You XOXO was because, one, it was a Vita game that wasn't like an indie clone or something. And two, it was a cheap, quick platinum trophy. So that was the whole point of the game. So there you go. A sort of game called I Am Mayo.
A sort of game.
I recommend it if you want a platinum trophy.
Is there a good story, though?
There's not really a story. I don't know what I played. I was going to talk about Observer, but I really can't bring myself to do so. So I thought I'd talk about a jar of mayonnaise instead.
Okay.
Go on, Tim. Do your last one.
Monsters of the Deep.
Final Fantasy 15.
Final Fantasy 15. As kind of indicated by the title, it may be Final Fantasy 15 kind of themed, but it's not a Final Fantasy game.
Except for being involved in the same places.
Except
the same
for being
characters.
Involved with the same characters in the same universe. But basically, it's
just a fishing mini game poured out into a game, isn't it?
Yes. In VR.
Oh, of course it is.
And yeah, of course it is. And
welcome back to BRB UK. Yeah.
And it's quite bizarre, and me being slightly less familiar with the world and the characters, I'm not entirely unknowledgeable of the characters. I know Noctis is one of the main characters in the game, and all the other people that I'm chatting to are his friends and all that type of stuff. But I don't get like the some of the creatures and some of the like areas of the world, and I don't get a lot of those references at all. Basically, they fall a bit flat on me. I don't know about you guys. I haven't played a Final Fantasy game since Final Fantasy VII, but I think 15 was the closest I came to possibly picking one up, and it's on sale again in the Black Friday deals, and I'm half thinking of doing so.
That should be a review hit, shouldn't it? Like on the front of the cover, the closest Tim came to almost picking one up.
But I don't know, like it seemed
better than a Naughty Dog game.
It seemed this year's, or you know, the latest Final Fantasy 15 was doing the things I would want from a Final Fantasy game. They looked intriguing enough and interesting to me that I didn't quite get that far as picking up, but I almost did, and that's why, as I said, I have a cursory knowledge of some of the characters because I did look into possibly picking up. But as you say, it is essentially just a fishing mini game. Now I believe there was a fishing mini game in the Final Fantasy, and I'm not sure how much this differs from that game and how much they've added to it.
I think I spent longer doing that than I did playing the game proper.
Yeah, and look, that's one of those things. Like, fishing games and fishing mini games are a proper guilty pleasure for me. I think I mentioned last week there's a fishing mini game in Everybody's Golf, and I literally couldn't wait till it opened up, sort of thing.
Who are you?
Yeah, and well, I also, I'd like, back in the day, I played quite a bit of like, was it bass fishing and stuff like that? And
Sega bass fishing.
And like, there's a few of those games that I've played over the years and have enjoyed. And there's something just
I have an important question.
Yes,
with Sega bass fishing, did you have the weird controller?
I didn't, but I think one of my friends must have done some play, because I definitely played on it at some stage, basically.
That's such a good controller.
Wasn't that on the Dreamcast?
Yeah,
that was the Dreamcast.
And I think I played it at some stage somewhere, but I didn't own it myself, basically. But yeah, like, it's something where... I really like a fishing game, as I said, kind of guilty pleasure type thing, but I kind of like just sitting there and sitting by the water and fishing for stuff type thing. I mean, like, as you would. Like, this... Right. It's
I
really
feel like
hard
you're arguing with yourself.
No, it's really hard to kind of to describe, because in some ways, being in VR makes it, as I said, more immersive. VR, anything VR kind of makes it more interesting to me at the moment, so it does kind of add to that. But also, there is something that it does benefit from the introduction of VR. And you said about controllers. I actually started playing on the DualShock 4, and then even like halfway through the tutorial, I was like, no, this is not the way to be playing this game. And I actually ended up restarting the game and restarting the tutorial with Move controllers, and that played so much better. It plays so much better with Move controllers that I don't actually think I can recommend you playing the game without it. So there's one caveat to that. If you're at all interested in this, make sure you've got the Move controllers to play it with, because for me, it plays so much better with Move controllers, it's not even funny. But that aside, like, as I said, the being in VR kind of adds to it, but also slightly subtracts from it. And the structure of the game adds to it and adds some nice things, which we'll come on to in a minute, but also slightly subtracts from it. Because there's something I really liked about kind of sitting there with a drink and generally just chilling out and having a fish kind of thing. You know what I mean? Like you would if you were out in the world fishing. But I don't like the idea of being sat on a wet riverbank in the rain and actually killing animals for the sake of fishing type
Side
of thing.
Side note,
you know what I mean?
Yep. Tim sat there playing a fishing game
yes.
with a drink, meant Tim couldn't see anything
yes.
and knocked a drink over.
Knocked the drink flying. This was not so good. So I was like, okay, that's one minus point in its kind of non-favor. But as I said, the VR-ness of the thing does add a kind of a level of, again, immersion and making you feel like you're in these locations. And it's got like a kind of variety of locations that you can kind of visit that, as I think are from, you know, environments with in the game. But it does look graphically quite nice. Again, this is one that I've heard and seen that it does look a lot nicer on the Pro, and it does look a bit more blurry on the non-Pro. But I've been fine playing it on, like, it doesn't impact the game at all. It does just look a bit nicer, and textures look a bit better, and a bit things look a bit cleaner and not as fuzzy, basically. But yeah, like, playing it just normally is fine. And as I said, the structure of the game is such that basically the story portion of the game, as it's described as, sees you going to a location, fishing for a number of fish until you get over a certain amount, and then that unlocks the kind of boss for that area that is a fish that you then have to battle with. And you are literally having to shoot it with a crossbow until it runs out of energy, and then you have to catch it with your fishing rod. And it kind of mixes up how you have to fight with those bosses a little bit as well. The first one is just literally kind of shooting it and then catching it. The second one that I fought was appearing in different places, and you had to make sure you were hitting the actual one rather than the kind of copies of it type thing. And then the third one I fought kind of jumped up onto the land and came at me and started trying to attack me, and you had to kind of fend it off before it got to you kind of thing. So there is a bit of variety to the kind of the boss modes that I've seen so far. And the only slight distraction is that in that main mode, which is the kind of main part of the game, it takes away from... It adds to my enjoyment because it's got that combat kind of element, which is fun and is a nice element to it, but it also subtracts from my just sitting by and casually fishing kind of thing, which is some of what I was looking forward to in the game. But it does...
get you a fold-out fisherman's chair.
Yes, that's what I need for the real effect. And yeah, then we can put a drink in the arm and then I'll be safe.
Mate, my first place, that was the furniture. We had a bunch of those.
Yeah, I'm not sure that's great. But anyway, but yeah, like, it does open up more modes as you go through the game as well. Like, it's got like a tournament mode that I just unlocked recently unlocked and played through, where you've just got, it's just literally whoever can catch the most fish in a lot in amount of time wins, basically, or the greatest weight of fish in the allotted time. And yeah, it's not got, well, it's kind of got slightly realistic looking fish, but they've all got kind of names that are related to the world that, you know, the Final Fantasy world which they inhabit and stuff like that. And then all the demon fish. And what is with popular culture reappropriating or re-spelling the word demon? It used to be that you could just have D-E-M-O-N as the word demon. And throughout this game, every time it mentions the word demon or demon fish...
Daemon tools.
It's D-A-E-M-O-N. Where did that come from? Why has that become a big thing in popular culture? Did someone say, hang on, we've been spelling demon wrong for a couple of centuries. It should be this way. I don't understand. Anyway, but... just one thing that bugged me. As I said, it's got those other modes as well as the kind of tournament mode. You've just got a free fishing where you can just go out and catch what you want, and then it's got like a mode where you can go out and catch a certain amount of fish, but you don't have to worry about the demon fish disturbing your fishing. And I haven't really played on that mode, and that might placate my need to just sit around and fish kind of thing. But generally speaking, it's a bit tongue-in-cheek. It's really quite well done. As I said, it's slightly less graphically impressive from this, but the worlds do look nice and they feel nice to inhabit. You kind of go to an environment and then you've got like various different places you can cast your line from and fish from. And so each environment, even if you've been to it once, like there's different things to find and different areas to fish from, and makes it easier to assess different things. You've got like a sonar device where you like give it a ping and it will detect areas where there's like, it will bring up like blue circles where there is fish, but you can also kind of see the fish under the surface as well. And that kind of takes away from the surprise of finding good areas to fish and type like that, but it also does speed up the whole process a bit as well. So it's definitely a more arcadey fishing game, especially with the kind of shooting mechanics of the demon fish. But I've really enjoyed it so far. Like, I'm really keen to jump back into it, and I'm really torn on whether I jump back into Skyrim or jump back into Monsters of the Deep at the moment, because I'm really enjoying both games and I'm not sure which one I want to rush back to first.
If you do Skyrim, so. There's less of you knocking over drinks.
Possibly.
Well, there you have it. That's Monster of the Deep, Skyrim VR, Wolfenstein 2, and I Am Mayo. Mm. Four different games for you to look out for, and I think we all know what's best. It's definitely I Am Mayo.
I would say not.
Yes, we have come to an end of the show, but before we do, Tim's going to tell you about what happened specifically on the day of the week that is the Tuesday.
Right, for anyone that doesn't know, each and every Tuesday we run a little event called Tabletop Tuesday at Loading Bar in Dalston. And you can join us for... board and card game shenanigans. Basically, each week we have a different feature game, and if you play that feature game that evening, you have a chance of winning a copy of that game at the end of the night. Now, this is where I would usually tell you which game is the feature game for this coming Tuesday.
Top Trump's Borderlands.
That is not true. I'm awaiting some new stuff and want to get something cool and exciting for next week particularly. So I just want to hold off and hopefully get that. But there will be more details on the meetup group, where we now have more than 1,500 members, or on bigredbarrel.com in the top left-hand corner. You can go there and have a look, and there will be more details of the game that you can play and win this week. But each and every Tuesday we have a different game, and a lovely crowd of people to come play with as well. So come on down to Loading Bar in Dalston, and I can help you with some recommendations, occasionally help with rules, and just generally make sure that you're there and have a good time playing board and card games.
Cool. And before we go, wouldn't be right if we didn't say thank you to a few people. So from the forums, Tim...
Why are we thanking me from the forums, Coleman?
God damn it.
I would like to
from
thank...
From the forums, Kev!
Red Cully's Hat, Stingo, and Stealthy Joe.
And on Twitter, thank you to Richard Kirk, Ian Marika, Gabriel Remo, Mark Fawcett. Yes, I was singing Islands in Industry while I was talking last week. Good ear. And thank you to Nelly. We didn't mean to forget you last week, sorry.
I didn't forget her last week.
And I'm assuming Dan put this in. Thank you to Mario/ManFriday, who sent Dan a copy of This War of Mine as a random act of kindness on Steam.
Is that one of his butlers?
What, Man Friday?
Yeah, Man Friday. That's his butler on a Friday, I think.
Oh, dear.
I think that's how it works. Also, just while you mentioned Ian, Ian has been pumping out a lot of content for the blog as well. He's done a few good reviews. I read the phone story one the other day. That was quite good. What? What are you laughing at now?
You read a few
he's
good
done
reviews.
A few good
couple
reviews.
Couple of crap ones and all.
No, it's been, he's done a few things and they happen to be reviews.
Oh, okay.
But
he also
did a preview of Phone Destroyer, which I read today, and I have downloaded that game and not played it yet, so I was interested to see what he thought of it. And yeah, that sounds good. He also did Fractured Butthole, Thor Ragnarok, Assassin's Creed, and a few other things. So go along and have a look at that stuff. That's been some good stuff that he's been putting up there as well.
Okay. Kev.
Hello.
Thanks for jumping on, man.
Yeah, that's really right. Nice to catch up with you.
I think I probably said about 7 words in this whole show.
Yeah, you cool. Like the VR has taken over lately.
Uh-huh.
I say lately, I mean like 6 months now, it's got to be.
Yeah.
Anyway, yeah, cheers for coming on. Hopefully we hear you back on the Barrelcast soon. If not, on the show.
Absolutely.
What else was I going to say? Tim's here.
I'm here. Still here.
And before we go out, we're going to have a change up this week. I was going to do this last week and I totally forgot. I work nights and long shifts and stuff as I forget. So I forget things a lot.
You can't keep on using that excuse, Coleman.
So we want to say it. Thank you to our friends, 8-Bit Jazz Heroes. I like jazz. I like music video games. I like retro video games. And I like the music of Super Mario Brothers, which has the greatest Super Mario Brothers tune on it, Ducky Ducky Swing. They have sent us over their cover of Ducky Ducky Swing, and it's from their new album, Press Start, which you can get available on iTunes, Amazon, Google Play, Bandcamp, and Overclocked.com, and they're going to play us out. So, that's the music you're going to hear. Jazz. Nice.
Jazz.
For this week, until next week, dear listeners, I have been Coleman.
I might have been Tim.
I've been Kev.
Yay!
And we'll catch you next week. And goodbye! Thank you.
ears are quite welcome for the podcasting goodness that you just heard. Why not roll on over to BigRedBarrel.com for more podcasts, news, reviews, and videos from the biggest, reddest site on the internet, BigRedBarrel.com.